Hi, and welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Mark Simon, joined by Matt Manoucherian and Bryce Rossler from the Research and Development Department. Justin Stein from Ops is our producer. Lots of things going on in the football world. The updates coming in from Schefter, Rappaport, and others. We thought we'd look at some things from a value perspective. Which teams got value for the needs they have? Let's start with the Patriots. Bill Belichick here is zigging when everyone else was zagging. The Patriots were huge spenders, several prominent deals, tight end Hunter Henry among them. It felt to me like the statistical community was not as high on these moves as the general public. What's the perspective from you guys on this?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, you look at the whole last year in New England, and it was kind of a soft tank the whole year. Like their first year after Brady, they really kind of swallowed. They ate their vegetables, so to speak, when it came to the salary cap. And so they did have more freedom going into this year. Every analyst is going to always say when you have a big spending free in free agency, we're going to have questions about it. I think there's no doubt about it. And I don't know, Bryce, we can talk about the good parts and the bad parts. Let's start off with Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, the two tight ends that they brought in, completely revamping. If you look in the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, the Patriots are dead last in terms of the tight end position, total points percentile rank. They had the worst output from the tight end position of any team in the NFL last year. So if nothing else, this does fill a need. What did you find when you looked into the value of these contracts, Bryce?
So one of the things I like to do when trying to get a gauge on how good or bad a free agent contract was is to compare their average annual value to our proprietary metric total points, just to get kind of a general sense of how much they spent per point of value. In that regard, Smith and Henry were particularly high cost players on a per point of value basis. Jonnu Smith, you're looking at paying him about $862,000 per total points per thousand snaps, which was the fourth highest among free agents. Hunter Henry was $592,000 per thousand snaps, which is the seventh highest. That's not to say that these are necessarily bad signings, but they certainly spent a lot at the position, and the allocation is strange to me. So this is going to invoke some nostalgia from the Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez days for sure, but I think we're looking at a different NFL than we were 10 years ago in terms of defenses matching 12 personnel. If you look at how often teams have started to match those groupings with five or more DBs compared to recent years, it's gone up from 2016 to 2018. Defenses matched 12 personnel looks with five plus DBs about 30% of the time. And the past 2 years, it's ticked up to 42% of the time. So you aren't necessarily dictating matchups with 12 personnel like you used to. So I'm really interested to see how they deploy those guys, because I think the alignments and the usage is going to be really key for them.
So I'm going to like half agree with you and half sort of disagree with you to the extent that you took a stance there. So first of all, you said Jonnu Smith, fourth worst value, and you said $862,000 per. Basically what you're saying there is you evaluated what, 80 free agent signings that have happened so far?
Yeah.
And of the 80, he was the fourth. It was the fourth worst bang for your buck. And Henry was the seventh worst bang for your buck. I'm not going to disagree with you at all that a lot of the times, especially the tight end position, is not going to be a bang for your buck position. I think we've seen that in a lot of our metrics, the way that total points distribution goes across players. I think that a lot of analysts would agree with that. The part that I'm going to kind of side with the Patriots on, you mentioned Aaron Hernandez and Gronk, and it's almost a crime to even think about that pair. But when you talk about Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, you're talking about guys that are 25 and 26 years old. Hunter Henry's a clear Y who fits the modern version of a Y, where you can have him split out and basically be an X for you also. I think that Jonnu Smith is a fairly prototypical H in the modern NFL. And I think to your point that teams aren't matching up 12 personnel with linebackers the same percentage of the time. They're just ignoring it and treating them as wide receivers, right? They're still staying with five or more defensive backs. Well, I think that if you do that against the Patriots are going to look at it like Cam Newton still in college. They're going to run single wing and they're going to make you pay 5 and 6 yards at a time. And, you know, maybe analysts would say that's a bad strategy, but man, if you want to, force Bill Belichick into a situation where he's got to play Navy style football from the 1950s, I think he might just take you up on that request. And I think they could have something interesting there.
Some of their moves, are they a considerably better team for the short term than they were, or are they not?
I mean, they spent a ton of money. I don't think the question is, are they better or are they worse? They have Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, where they had nobody at tight end. What, like Larry Izzo's kid or something like that? It was a weird position group for them last year. So they're better. The question is this efficient? And I mean, I'm not going to argue that it's necessarily efficient, but I could see a way that this manifests itself positively for them.
Yeah, I agree with Matt. I don't think there's any way that you can argue that the Patriots didn't get better. I think the big question is how are they positioning themselves for long-term success, especially within the context of Bill Belichick's age? I think he's coming up on 70, if he's not 70 already. So they're really going for it. We'll see if the splurge comes back to haunt them in the long run. But I agree with Matt. I don't think there's any question that they got better.
Biden's got like 10 years on him. So are we really worried about Bill Belichick retiring anytime soon?
No comment.
All right. So one other deal with the Patriots, Matthew Judon, 4 years, $56 million. What's your take on him?
Well, Bryce, you put together the numbers on this one. I think you said it came out at $287,000 per total points per 100 snaps. So about the same rate as Shaq Barrett. If you kind of just look at it in simple terms, $32 million over 2 years. If you think, consider that $16 million a year for the next 2 years, they paid for him, but they got a guy that's been productive over his career. Never a double digit sack year so far for Judon, but he also only rushes about 70 to 75% of pass snaps. So I think he's tailor-made to fit into New England, what they want to do defensively in terms of having positional versatility where a guy doesn't have to always be rushing just because he's got that kind of ability. He had 58 total pressures in 2019. So despite never having a double-digit sack year, in terms of the type of performance that he's had and affecting the backfield, I think if he can get back to that 2019 form, this will look like a really good contract.
Let's slide over to the Jets, another AFC East team. Some would say that trying to boost them to contender status was a Sisyphean task, particularly under Adam Gase. But now Joe Douglas has a new head coach in place. The Jets went for Corey Davis, receiver from the Titans, who had his best season, and Carl Lawson, who didn't necessarily rack up sacks like some of the big edge rushers, but was a top five guy in pressures. How would you categorize these moves by Gangrene? Is the value there?
Well, the first one I look at is Corey Davis. Corey Davis, probably the most interesting thing about him is that he's about the only receiver that's been signed at this point. There's still just not a lot of movement right now going on the wide receiver marketplace. And I guess that makes sense. It's an expensive position. And, you know, when teams are being forced, you know, they're choosing meat and potatoes instead of what are really luxury items in a football sense. I know that you got to build your offense around receivers and the passing game, but the fact of the matter is the replacement value just is there are guys that exist that can play receiver in a lot of offenses. And it's hard to make the case to spend the money on that position when there's not a lot of money to go around. Bryce, what did the numbers think of the Corey Davis? We had it at a 3-year, $37.5 million deal, $27 million guaranteed. How did that stack up?
So we haven't seen a lot of movement on the wide receiver front so far in free agency. In terms of the overall free agency class, this is sort of in the third quartile of value. So not an egregious overpay by any means, but you're also talking about making this guy the 20th highest paid receiver in football.
That's shocking.
By AV, yeah.
So to me, that feels like an overpay. I was going to say 340,000 per total points, but that doesn't sound like a miserable deal. But in the context of him being the 20th highest paid receiver in the NFL, I know like the latest guy to get paid is a lot of times the highest guy to get paid. But that sounds like for a guy that's produced kind of marginally, paying him, I think he's a number two. And I think you're paying a top 20 salary to a number two. I don't think that adds up. Bryce, were there any other Jets moves that you looked at that you thought were interesting?
Yeah, obviously the big one is Carl Lawson. Carl Lawson is a player that we really like, and they kind of paid premium money for him, $350,000 per total points per 1,000 snaps. But I think this is a player who was underutilized in Cincinnati, and he's young. I think he's 25, 26 years old. I think his best football is ahead of him. And I think when you're talking about edge rushers, there's scarcity at that position for players that can really get after the quarterback. So I'm completely okay with what they shelled out for Carl Lawson, especially on the length of the contract and considering his age. I really like that signing.
What's good value for an edge rusher in terms of dollars per total points per 100 per 1,000?
So I can't say that I've studied that super in depth, but anecdotally speaking, I think you're looking at about the 300,000 range, somewhere in there, give or take.
How does Judon compare to Lawson by that metric?
So Judon was similar to the Shaq Barrett deal. Judon was 287,000, so a little bit more bang for your buck there. But I would also argue that Carl Lawson is a better player.
Right. You might have to pay a little bit more per dollar for a better player. I think that's something that you'll see across sports. One thing I was going to mention on the Carl Lawson deal and a reason why I liked it, you saw a Jets team that was atrocious last year. I'm looking at their team page right now. There's only one position on either side of the ball where they were above average, and that was defensive tackle. Obviously, the strength of Quinnen Williams there. But edge rusher was a miserable position for them last year. They were, you know, in the bottom fifth of the league in terms of performance from the edge. So I think I'm with you. Carl Lawson is a nice fit in terms of, you know, their offense is needier than their defense, but that doesn't mean that their defense didn't have needs.
What's the next thing that they need?
Offense. They got to figure out. I mean, if they can figure out a way to get Sam Darnold to perform better, I think that's the first step. But I mean, I would love to see the Jets go after Justin Fields at number two. That's a complete digression. But the Jets sort of maybe adopting a little bit more of the Shanahan, LaFleur style of offense, that scheme. I would love the way that Justin Fields would fit into that. I actually mentioned that in the report on him in the Football Rookie Handbook, getting him on the move and changing the sort of areas that he can be attacking the defense from. Instead of asking him to make 3-4-step reads, get him on the move, make him 1-2 reads, and then put the pressure on the defense with his feet. So I would love that fit in New York. And then all of a sudden, you might be cooking.
Yeah, I would say that the Jets don't get Justin Fields at number two. They failed.
Would you be cool with a trade down?
With trade downs, there's just so many hypotheticals. Where are they moving down to? What are they getting in return? But I firmly believe that Sam Darnold's not the answer. He's fared really poorly in a lot of our metrics the past several years. And I know that you can make excuses for him when Adam Gase is the head coach and he hasn't had the best surrounding cast. But I think you look at him on film and I don't think that he's put it together yet. And I don't think that he ever will. And Justin Fields is sitting there. I think Justin Fields is going to be first in any other class where you don't have Trevor Lawrence. I think they make a mistake if they pass on Fields.
I think I'm with you. Maybe, you know, if you could trade for Deshaun Watson, I'd choose that first. But yeah, otherwise, I think I'm with you.
Without giving up 5-1s?
I mean, if you're giving up the number 2 overall pick this year with the Justin Fields on the board, I think that probably limits you to only having to give up like 1 more 1.
We'll see what the Jets do. We could go to the other New York football team. The Giants were able to get Leonard Williams signed to a 3-year deal. I remember some skepticism in some sports radio circles, but Williams had his best year last year with 11.5 sacks. Leonard Floyd and the Rams, a 4-year, $64 million deal, and Shelby Harris stays with the Broncos on a 3-year contract. How do the numbers match up with the value here?
So I think you're right in that Leonard Williams overperformed relative to the skepticism.
Hold on. Leonard Williams, though, I think the skepticism was about the way that he was acquired and the way that they handled not paying him, not negotiating how they were going to pay him before they acquired him, was much more about that than it was anybody thinking Leonard Williams was a bad football player, right?
Maybe I have a revisionist memory on this, but I seem to recall that people were of the opinion that Leonard Williams was a solid but not good player.
Okay.
I might be living in a bubble, but that's how I remember it. But I think either way, he had a good season. The amount that they ended up giving him, to your point about the financial handling of it, was pretty high. He was just outside the top 10 highest values in terms of money shelled out per point of value at $418K. So you can still make an argument that they're still overpaying for Leonard Williams to this day, especially in light of what they acquired him for. But he's certainly grown and become a good player, but yeah. I'm not sure the value is there.
Yeah, I agree with you on this one. An interesting thing when you look at the Giants team page in the handbook versus the Jets team page, each of them only has one position that's above average. And for the Giants, it's defensive tackle, just like it is for the Jets. So you look at Dexter Lawrence, you look at Leonard Williams, and you can see, I mean, they've clearly prioritized that position, but this is a little bit crazy. 3 years, $63 million with $45 million guaranteed. I mean, you're paying this dude like he's Aaron Donald. And I mean, he might be the next best thing, but there's a big gap between that one and that two. So it's a weird situation where you've got a good player, but the value relative to the contract is kind of middling.
What about Floyd and Harris?
Floyd is kind of weird because he just the type of player he is makes it hard to assess how his value should be determined, like what his peer group is. Well, he had a career year last year in terms of sacks, I think, but
correct. His first body, year above 10 sacks. Yep.
Yeah. His body type and the role he plays. I don't have his pass rush percentage in front of me. I wouldn't consider him a true edge.
He's ranged in the 70% throughout his career. He was up over 80% last year, but that was the first time in the last 5 years. So you're accurate to say that.
Yeah. So he's not really a true edge. And I still don't think he's everything people thought he would be coming out of Georgia. He's also going to be 29 this year. So he's kind of a weird bird, both in terms of build, role, and age. Then you consider how much they paid for him relative to value. You're looking at $400,000 per point of value. It's kind of, I don't have a great feel for how good or bad this deal is. And I also think that the Rams cap situation being what it is makes me more critical of them handing out money like this. But he's a good player. I'm just not sure how much I like the value.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's a good player. It's very much a win now move. Probably of the 4 years, we probably will get more details that it was only 2 years or really guaranteed out of it. And it's become similar to the Judon contract at that point, right? And a very different player, but sort of a similar usage to get back to your point in terms of the rush percentage. When you look at Floyd, though, even though he's never been a huge sack guy, he's been a pretty good pressures guy. He's been in the 30s for pressures each year until a 48 that he had last year. A solid player, but I'm with you that I worry that they're paying him like he's either A, a better player than he is, or B, a younger player than he is, because come September 8th, like you mentioned, he turns 29 years old. And yeah, you'll have him for his age 29 and his age 30 season. So it's not like you're paying him at age 34. But, you know, I think, again, we look at this as, and again, this is why the analysts are always going to criticize free agency. You can probably get, if you hit on a draft pick, you're going to get much better bang for your buck than you can with a player like this. Shelby Harris, let's talk about that one real quick, though. Mark mentioned it a couple times, and I think that's a pretty good value deal, I think, relative to the bunch. So we should make sure to hit on that one.
Yeah, 136. This is one of the better deals of free agency so far. 136 is an 136K. He's an older player. He was something of a late bloomer, but he's been really productive for the Broncos recently at that flexing between the zero technique and the three technique. And it's not a lot of money, not necessarily a premium position, but the production is certainly there. And it's, you know, 3 years, $27 million with $15 million guaranteed. So I think this is a really good deal for the Broncos.
Yeah, I'm with you here. Good deal for the Broncos. He's been a nice player for them for the last couple of years. Not an every down, every snap guy, but a guy that's consistently making an impact when you turn on the games and you see it show up in his total points. 26 last year, 29 the year before that, and 26 was in just 11 games in 2020. So I think that's a real nice player there, and I like that the value gets picked up.
All right, moving over in the AFC. We saw in the Super Bowl how much the Chiefs needed offensive line help. I know you can say they needed a tackle, but their big splash was snagging Joe Tooney away from the Patriots. Five-year deal. Tooney, among our top total points guys year in and year out. Did the Chiefs do the right thing here?
So we look at the trade. It's 5 years, $80 million, but in practicality, it's 3 years and $48 million. For me, you know, the Chiefs are limited in terms of their resources. They've paid their quarterback, their receivers so much. Besides that, they focused a lot of their resources on defense in the past few years. I don't know how they pay their tackles at this point. I, you know, basically the cupboard is bare there, and I don't know exactly what their plan is. But I do like the combination of Thuney with a returning Duvernay-Tardif. I think all of a sudden you're talking about an interior offensive line that's really strong. And I know I was a part of a team in New Orleans that relied on a similar build for our offensive line with Drew Brees back in the day. Now, Brees and Mahomes are different styles of quarterbacks, but in either situation, I think the principle is the same. Try to keep the paint clear with good interior offensive line play, and then let the quarterback worry a little bit more about the stuff that's coming off the edge. Bryce, what did your numbers have to say about this one?
Yeah, so this deal in terms of bang for your buck is just outside the top 10 highest dollar amount per value.
So the top 10 worst bang for your buck is what you're saying.
Yeah, top 10 worst bang for your buck, $385,000, just below Corey Linsley, who we'll get to in a moment. But to what you were saying, Matt, this is a really good interior offensive lineman. Obviously, you want to protect Patrick Mahomes because you're going to go as Patrick Mahomes goes. I'm okay with the Chiefs splurging a little bit for a player who is, one, really good, and two, is going to help protect your best player. It is a little strange what they have going on with the tackle situation, but there's worse ways they could have spent this money.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is a clear splurge. You're talking about each of the last 5 years, he started all 16 games, about 1,000 snaps every season, 64 blown blocks over that time. So not a crazy amount at all. Just 1.2% of his snaps with blown blocks on them. He's been a good player over there. He had a ridiculous year in 2019 when he had no penalties throughout the entire season. But we had him with over 30 total points each of the last 5 years. Just a solid, solid offensive lineman. Call me biased, but I mean, if you're going to overspend at one position, I'm good with a 28-year-old guard that you know is going to perform for you.
Yeah, and I think to your point about his consistency and playing all 16 games, that's probably a big thing for the Chiefs too, considering how the Super Bowl went down with all the backups on that offensive line and Patrick Mahomes running for his life all the time. I think there's some hidden value there in terms of his availability.
All right, let's stay on the interior and let's talk about another interior offensive line move. Another player I love, Total Points loves, Corey Linsley, who is now going to be the highest paid center in the NFL. He's coming over from Green Bay, going to the Los Angeles Chargers for 5 years, $62.5 million. I know looking in the Football Rookie Handbook, the Chargers were at the dead bottom of the league in terms of offensive line total points in 2020. And if you watched any Chargers games, I think that backs up what you saw. It was a lot of Justin Herbert running for his life and doing really amazing things out there. I'm really curious to see if all of a sudden, if they can get him an offensive line, is Justin Herbert, I think for me, maybe for you, Bryce, part of me still thinks it's all going to come crashing down. And Justin Herbert that we saw last year was something of a mirage that will revert back to what we expected when he was coming out of Oregon. But I think more likely what'll be interesting is, can he continue to grow? Can he transcend to that next level as they build around him? Because it's one thing to play well when you're running for your life back there, but not to win a lot of games. It's another thing to have Corey Linsley and players like that along with you and then actually see if you can make some noise in the playoffs. So another big signing for a good player. How does it come out in terms of the efficiency?
So this is our 10th worst deal so far of the 80-something free agent signings we've tracked, but I think I'm okay with a bit of a splurge at the center position, considering, one, what you mentioned with the Chargers' offensive line woes, and two, if Linsley can help Herbert with protection stuff, I think that's hidden value. If you have a veteran center who can assist your quarterback going into his second year with some of that protection stuff, which can be very difficult to master, even for veteran players.
Right. Take it off. Getting take a lot it off his plate. It's, you know, he doesn't have to worry about it. I agree with you.
So I think that will help Herbert grow some, if not perform better. So I think that's hidden value. And like you said, you gotta protect your investments at quarterback, especially when the Chargers offensive line was as bad as it was last year.
And one thing worth noticing by our metrics, Linsley was a little bit better in the pass game than in the run game. So I think the Chargers will hope that carries over.
Also of note, the last 4 years, his total points per snap, pretty much the same. Definitely consistent in that regard. All right, and then last, let's talk about Trent Williams and his signing. What do you guys got?
Ooh, I'm curious to hear what you got to say, Bryce. The highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history, 6 years, $138 million, $55 million guaranteed, $30 million signing bonus. I can't imagine that this is going to come out being very efficient. It seems like an overpay for an aging guy. Good player, don't get me wrong. But how do the numbers shake out, Bryce?
Yeah, so I have to admit that I have a soft spot in my heart for Trent Williams as a former OU player.
You have a soft spot in your heart?
Hey, man, let's not go there. but no, like you said, Trent Williams is a great player, but he's also 33. He's now the highest paid offensive tackle. And as of right now, this is the fifth worst deal in terms of value in free agency, $735,000 per total points per thousand, which is much higher than some of these other offensive linemen we've talked about.
We should be clear. When we're talking about total points, we're talking about what you produced, you know, most recently, how efficient you were based on your performance last year. That's not necessarily a forward-looking statistic. When you add in the aging curve and you think about that, it becomes even kind of more suspect, I think. You know what? I'll couple it with, I don't think we have numbers on the Alex Mack contract yet, because that one just came in. And you talk about another aging player. He's 35 now. But I like him going back to Kyle Shanahan. I was in Cleveland with both those guys at the same time. Then they were obviously both in Atlanta together, them getting reunited. I imagine that he won't get paid $140 million or anything near that on his contract. So assuming that comes in, you know, under $10 million, I think that they're getting a nice signing in Alex Mack there. And regardless how much they paid these guys, watch out for that offensive line this year, because they could be really good.
All right, to close the show, give me one, we could call it a snap judgment, one takeaway, two sentences. Your biggest thing maybe to watch moving forward.
For me, I come back to the Patriots. I'm really curious to see what their offense looks like. They finally seem to be investing. I don't know if they're investing in the right players or not, but I do like that they're choosing this sort of really interesting strategy, going back to the true Y and the true H. They'll be in 12 personnel a lot. Like I said, it might be single wing with Cam. So as much as I kind of hate the Patriots and have my entire life, I'm going to be feeling some cognitive dissonance and sort of kind of liking a little bit of what they're experimenting with and seeing how it plays out.
I think on a more macro level, I'm probably more interested in how this unique set of circumstances, this free agency period, are going to reverberate throughout the next couple years.
Right.
I'm not a salary cap expert, but the way that the cap was depressed because of the COVID year and some of the trickery that teams have resorted to, like the Saints, for example, that kind of stuff interests me because I want to know how it's going to affect how free agency plays out in the next few years. So I'm not interested in this year's free agency in and of itself as much as I am how free agency is going to look because of this period.
I think you make a really good point, because you hear a lot of people talk about this being the weird year and then things getting back to normal. It's going to be a couple of years before things are truly back to normal. We had the cap go backwards this year, but it's still going to, we're still robbing Peter to pay Paul. We're actually borrowing from future salary caps just to keep it as high as we've kept it this year. So yeah, it went from around 200 down to 186. It's going to work its way back up, but it's going to take more time than it would have, because like the national debt, we borrowed from our future selves there. So I think that's a really great point. As far as like the Saints and the funny money stuff, come on, this is really nothing new, right? All that they've done, it's the same thing as any sort of contract where you say the signing bonus is going to be prorated over the length of the contract. So if you make it a big signing bonus, then in order to kick that can down the road, like the Saints have been doing since before I started working there over 10 years ago, all you're doing is spreading out that proration over more time. So whether you make the total value of the contract $140 million or you make it $1 billion, it's really irrelevant. And as we look at it in the future, the only ramification that's going to have on the Saints is they're kicking more and more of the pain down the road. Drew Brees is gone. This strategy isn't.
Another thing is that we're moving from 16 games to 17 games. So the framework we're evaluating some of these moves is going to change because players are now being paid less per game.
The 2021 SIS Football Rookie Handbook is coming soon, featuring scouting reports on more than 250 players entering the NFL in 2021. The handbook is a must-read for football fans. the book is written as if you, the reader, are one of the team's decision makers. We capture every strength and weakness both through scouting and statistical analysis, and we've got the most detailed injury information in the scouting industry. The handbook also features essays on important football topics and provides an in-depth take from the perspective of every position on the field. New this year, it will be available on Kindle. To order the Football Rookie Handbook, go to www.actasports.com or wherever books are sold. All right, guys, thanks for joining us. This wraps up the Sports Info Solutions program for today, Off the Charts podcast. Thank you for listening. You can find us on Twitter at sportsinfo_SIS. The Football Rookie Handbook is available wherever you buy books, and the best deal is through our publisher at actasports.com. For my co-host Matt Manicharian, our guest Bryce Rossler, and our producer Justin Stein, I'm Mark Simon. Thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.